For the past 6 weeks, the most viewed show on the major networks is simply entitled Resurrection. And surprisingly, the show was even running neck and neck with what previously was the most viewed show, which was known as The Walking Dead. Both shows having to do with a similar theme, obviously, of dead people coming to life, and yet Resurrection puts a much more positive spin upon it. And the media being somewhat surprised that the show has been as highly viewed as it has been, did a little bit of research, and they took some polls, and then they went to one of the writers who writes for the show and said, "Can you give us any theory as to why this show has become so popular?" And in response, he said, "I think it's because it taps into that hope that we all have, which is the hope that death is not the end." And friends, the message of Easter is that Jesus Christ is the fulfillment of that hope. You see, at the center of the Bible is not simply advice on how to live our lives, although that's part of it. At the center of the Bible is not a set of rules about what it means to be a good person, although that's part of it. At the center of the Bible is the resurrection of the Son of God himself. And Jesus, because he is raised and is alive, is the one who assures us that death is not the end. Now, the challenge is taking that story that happened so long ago in a country so far away and figuring out what it gives to us now with all of the problems and the stresses and the frustrations that we go through all these years later in Bergen County, New Jersey, when we can be tempted to think the resurrection was just a fascinating story. And yet, as we look at the Bible's teaching on resurrection, it tells us that it's more than just a story, it's more than just an inspiration, but it actually gives us something. And so here's the question I want to deal with today in the next few moments. What does the resurrection of Jesus Christ give us? And these two readings that Carol just read tell us that it gives us two gifts. It gives us the promise of belonging, and it gives us proofs for believing. Two gifts the resurrection of Jesus gives us: the promise of belonging and proofs for believing. So let's look first of all. The resurrection gives us the promise of belonging. Now, the epistle reading, Colossians chapter 3, Paul says, "Since Christ has been raised from the dead, your life is hidden with Christ in God." Now think about this. When something is hidden with somebody, in somebody, that thing that is hidden is part of that person. It belongs to that person. And the point that Paul is getting across is that the longing that we all have to simply belong is met in the resurrection. You know, when I was 6 years old, I went to a department store with my mother in Virginia. And somehow, as she was shopping and I was clowning around, I got separated from her. It was at Christmas time in the mall. I was horrified. And everywhere I looked, I saw other people, none of whom were my mother. I had no identification on me. All I knew to do was to stand there and cry. And as I did, all I could think about was, where is my mom? And I have to confess that in the back of my mind, I actually worried a great deal about the fact that when and if she did find me, was I going to be in trouble for being lost and for wandering away? And how would anyone believe that I really belonged to her? Until finally I went to an older person at the help desk at that department store, and she could tell that I was visibly shaken, and she had me sit on a stool, like I can remember it like it was yesterday, under the fluorescent lights that were just faintly twinkling. And it was at that moment that my mother came running up to me. No words were spoken, but she embraced me and she wept and she held me tight. And the woman who had been keeping me looked at her and said, I can tell by looking at you that this child belongs to you. And for the rest of the day, my mother never let me go. And you know, when Paul says that your life is hidden with Christ in God, he's talking about that sense of knowing that he holds on to you. I mean, one of the reasons he says to Mary, don't hold on to me, it's not because he's saying, I don't like people touching me. It's because he's saying, my work is not yet finished. And the work that I'm going to carry on is not you holding on to me. It's me holding on to you, Mary, and never letting you go. Now listen, I know that there's a sense in which cognitively most of you know this, and yet the reality is we struggle a great deal with our identity. We worry a great deal about what other people think of us. We worry about our failures and what that will do for our reputation. We try to define ourselves by our success or by our belongings or by our talents. Our identity is an important thing. We had a bad day yesterday as my wife's wallet was stolen while we were at the mall. And in the hours that surround such an event, you feel violated and your mind starts to wander, okay, what do these strangers who took the wallet know about us now? And what will they do with this information? You know, I suspect that that's simply symptomatic of a deeper longing that we all have, which is the longing to have an identity that is secure, that we don't have to worry about. And folks, that's what the resurrection does. Because Jesus is alive, he lives in you, you live in him, your life is hidden with Christ in God, you belong to him. So that's the first gift the resurrection gives us, the promise of belonging. But there's a second gift the resurrection gives to us, and that's proofs for believing. Now, Acts chapter 1 tells us that when Jesus rose from the dead, he gave many convincing proofs that he was alive. And John chapter 20 highlights two of those for us briefly. And so consider, first of all, the proof of the witnesses of the empty tomb. John's gospel, Matthew's gospel, Mark's gospel, Luke's gospel, they all go to tremendous detail to make clear to us that the first people who not only witnessed the resurrection, but who were commissioned to tell other people about the resurrection were women. Now that's a beautiful thing because it shows to us God's high view of women in the church. and the office that they fulfill in the ministries of the church. But there was more to that aspect of the story. See, in the first century, women's testimonies were not admissible in court. Any court would not allow a woman to testify, and no woman's testimony would be trusted or even admitted into evidence when pleading a case. And yet, the gospel writers go to great lengths to show us that the first witnesses to testify of the resurrection were women. Here's the point. If you were to sit down in the first century and try and concoct a story that you wanted to try to convince others to believe, you wouldn't have written it this way. And therefore, the only explanation for the fact that it was written this way is that it must have happened. So that's one of the proofs, the testimonies at the tomb. But there's a second proof for believing, and that's the spread of the church. Jesus says to Mary, "Go and tell my brothers that I am risen." And he was talking about this small group of people known as the disciples, who had already decreased from 12 to 11 because Judas left. And not only that, but this small group of 11 guys, the rest of John's gospel goes on to tell us that the reason they weren't there at the tomb is because they were scared. Another aspect that you would not have included if you were trying to make up a story. They were scared, they doubted, and yet from this little band of 11 scared, doubting people, an entire movement spread like wildfire and continues to spread today. And that movement is known as the church. Henry Ford once said, "It is a sign of the reality of God's existence that the church has survived at all, because no other institution run so poorly would stay in business for so many years." And so the very fact that with this little group of ragtag, ragamuffin people, the church grew means that they had to have seen something that changed them. And so the resurrection gives us proofs for believing. You know, I love the band U2. I have ever since I was a kid. And I was recently watching an interview with the lead singer of this rock and roll band by the name of Bono. He was being interviewed by a British journalist who was talking to him about the content of his music, but somewhere along in that conversation, he immediately says to him, "Do you pray?" And his answer was, "Yes." And he said, "Well, to whom or to what do you pray?" And he said, "To Christ." And then the journalist said, "Why do you pray to Christ? Wasn't he just a man?" And Bono said, "No, it's not acceptable to say he was simply a good man or a good teacher, because he claimed to be God, he claimed to rise from the dead. And therefore, if he wasn't God, he was a liar or a madman for saying such things, and therefore we shouldn't be following him." And then he went on and he said this. He said, "I find it hard to accept that the millions and millions of people for 2,000 years who have felt their lives touched and inspired by some person, I find it hard to believe that all those lives have been touched by some nutcase." And so the journalist said, "And therefore it follows that you believe Jesus was divine?" And Bono answered, "Yes." "And therefore it follows that you believe that he physically rose from the dead?" And Bono answered, "Yes. I have no problem with miracles. I am one." And he concluded the interview by saying, "And so You believe that the risen Jesus made promises that will come true? And Bono answered, yes, I do. Now listen, that's a bold thing for a rock and roll star in the mainstream to say. But I'll tell you today, it's true. And the reason he can believe that is because the resurrection gives to us the gifts of the promise of belonging to God, to his family in the church, and it gives us proofs for believing. Jesus rose. He is alive. He promises us that our life is in his hands. And he has given us these promises and these proofs that we might believe that he really does love us. And in 10 years from now, if you're a worse person than you are today, he will not love you any less. Thanks be to God, through Jesus Christ, our risen Lord. Amen.